The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world, this world spends far more money on the pursuit of war than any other particular endeavor. Whether you're talking of the age-old tired guns versus butter issue, whether you're talking about social welfare, whether you're talking about food and famine, whether you're talking about medical research and the process of aging or trying to prevent people from dying from cancer or leukemia, this world spends far more on military research and development, far more on guns, on bombs, on ever more bizarre and effective and speedy methods of killing people than it does for any other single expenditure. You know, it's a rather sad travesty, the time in which we live, where the major nations parrot one after the other about arms limitations, the SALT talks, which means Strategic Arms Limitations Treaty, and the SALT II, which is scheduled to get underway, and talk about nuclear non-proliferation treaties. But it's also an interesting point, I think, to bring out that practically everything you enjoy, practically everything that is a part of your environment in this modern society, and here I speak even of this medium that I use now, of radio, whether we're talking of telecommunications, telemetry, the space age, the age of plastics, packaging, whether we're talking of all types of synthetics, clothing, the field of medicine, whether we're talking of the field of transportation and jet aircraft, almost everything. Where can you look in the entirety of society where you do not find spin-off from military research? No, I mean it. I mean even lightweight building materials that we're using today, the synthetics that we're using in our homes, new types of insulation, types of glass and plastics, methods that we use in modern technology even to devise our homes, our cooling systems, our communications and transportation systems. These largely are the result of spin-off from military research and development. The entire age of science in which we have now entered, the space age, is basically spin-off from military development. You know, nearly half of all of the brains of all the accumulated knowledge, the ability, you can call it science power or scientific brain power that we've got in the world today, is dedicated to military research. Isn't that shocking when you look at the problems of humankind, when you look at the problems of overpopulation, of stagnation and pollution, of the fact of the pollution of the very air we breathe, not only the pollution of existing air, but the destruction of oxygen at its source by the destruction of diatoms in the sea and the green growing things that should cover the land, but the growth increasingly around the world at a rapid pace of our deserts, the covering up of land by asphalt and concrete and by sprawling urban housing developments. When you look at the agonizing problems of nations like Bangladesh with horrible rampant famine, of the Sub-Sahara Belt, the same comment. Of the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands, the billions, they say, are going to die this year and next and the year beyond that. Up to 75 and more million people dead of starvation. And yet when you come in and say that half of the world's total scientific and technical manpower are employed on improving existing weapons and developing new weapons, and yet we've already got overkill, many, many times. The Soviet Union and the United States could wipe each other out 100 times apiece. And yet every other intelligent mind, now really that's not the way to say it, because some people can say you don't have to be a scientist to be an intelligent mind, and I sure agree with that. So I think I'm saying every other specialist in a particular scientific field is devoting his brains, his energy, and his waking moments, and his thought, and his research to military research and development, trying to find ever more effective ways of killing people, of delivering mass destruction. And they're working with everything from the neutron bomb to botulinum toxin. Botulism that you hear about has actually been packaged by these people. They claim that a tiny thimbleful is enough to kill the whole world. We have the doomsday idea of enough poison being carried in a false compartment in a briefcase to obliterate all life on a continent. Nerve gas, all types of gases that could actually be put into orbit and then unleashed, projected back toward the Earth in a capsule of some type, which would then burst high in the jet stream and then spread poisons, chemicals, toxins, nerve gas, or what have you, throughout the entirety of a nation in a swath 100 or so miles wide by the upper atmosphere. These people are devoting their brains to doing this, and what a tragedy it is with all these agonizing problems we've got today, that about half of the technical brains of the world are spending their time on military research and development. No wonder, it says in the book of Jeremiah, they cry, peace, peace, when there is no peace. No wonder. The Bible says continually, it's kind of like that grunt and groan wrestler that used to be choking a guy to death with his finger up his nose or another finger in his eye, but he's back on the other side, and the poor referee, the bumble, fumble-footed, huge referee that always gets in the way and you can't see around him, is over there saying, hey, you're choking that guy. And with one arm, he's waving his hand in the air and saying, oh, no, 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 I'm not choking him at all. See, see, here's my hand right here, free. But with the other one, he's got one finger up his nose and a thumb in his mouth and a little finger in his eye and another one in his ear or something. Or that's at least the way it looks. It's incredible that major powers of the world are ostensibly on a search to limit the spread of weapons, that we're talking about strategic arms limitations. Yet you live in a time where nuclear reactor building is going on at a frenzied pace. And as I said in the last couple of programs now, West Germany is selling the ability, which really is the way it sums up, to make atomic weapons to Brazil and to many other countries as well. The United States, of course, has been doing that. You remember during the latter days of the Nixon administration, when Mr. Nixon went down to visit Anwar Sadat of Egypt, we had to make a lot of concessions. I talked about that. So that administration, and I assume that the new administration has not changed it. Apparently, if one administration, no matter what happens to it, makes promises abroad, the next one that comes along has got to abide by those promises. So we promised all kinds of nuclear reactors to help out for some reason. I don't know. They just finished that huge dam. They're supposed to have an awful lot of power there in Egypt. And I don't know how many light bulbs a lot of those Hubbles have got in those cities anyway, but they were promised nuclear reactors. And that happened largely as spin-off from the energy crisis, because as a result of the threatened shut-off of oil. And of course, a new conflict in the Middle East could bring that about in very speedy and dramatic fashion. Many of the countries of the world, increasingly those in Europe too, are looking for alternative energy sources, meaning atomic, usually. Nuclear energy, usually. They talk, of course, a good fight about some of the others like geothermal and solar. But there's very little being done, and a huge gap, a huge lapse of time required to develop the kind of technology to really utilize that in any large scale. Desalinization facilities, solar energy facilities, geothermal facilities. Sure, there are certain experimental plants that do exist. Matter of fact, solar energy is used very widely in Israel, believe it or not. But that's on a very small scale comparative to the world's needs. So the spinoff from the energy crisis has resulted in a fantastic proliferation of the building of nuclear reactors in countries all over the world. And more countries stand ready now to join the atomic club. And now, in the meantime, while the United States, just like that wrestler, waves its arm in the air and says, let's halt the spread of nuclear weapons, we go down and build Egypt a reactor. While we're at it, a few other countries too. While the Russians say, let's discuss strategic arms limitations and have detente, they're building furiously, behind the scenes, ever more deadly, huge rockets with nuclear-tipped warheads. The United States and the Soviet Union aren't satisfied with the ability to obliterate one another 100 times. They 101, 102, 103, 109, 116, then 150. And when the Soviets have the power to obliterate us 159 times, we want the power to obliterate them 160 times. So after they've obliterated us 159 times, and we're still there, we're going to say, now we're going to get you one more time, so you'll be gone. How many lives have we all got? They've only got something like 20, is it 20 tons, 30 tons, or 50 tons of TNT for every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth, when you know one stick in your hip pocket's enough to blow you to kingdom come. But that isn't enough. They want more. And when you see nearly half of all the scientific brain power of the world devoted to war, I say somebody's being lied to somewhere. They may say peace, peace, but as the Bible says, there is no peace. Nearly half a million scientists and engineers, roughly half of the world's total scientific and technical manpower, are employed on improving existing weaponry and developing new weapons. And any kind of an exertion, an effort of that magnitude has got to get some pretty dramatic results. I mean, if you say at any one given time to me that half of all of the scientists and the research and lab technicians and the engineers of the whole world are working now on improving rapid transit, I would say, man, at last we're going to get something done. If you said half of all the medical doctors in the whole world are doing nothing but devoting their entire time to discovering the cause and the cure of cancer, I'd say, well, now we're going to expect some dramatic results. You could say that about anything from leukemia to hemorrhoids. And people would probably tell you, all right, we're going to get some results. I would say the same thing when they tell us that half of the brains of the scientific people and engineers are employed on developing and improving weaponry and developing new weapons. I'm going to say, boy, they're going to come up with results. And you know, when you see these dramatic articles of, like, say, the Shah of Iran's fleet of hovercraft coming ashore, I mean, it was really impressive. I mean, if you were to stand right there and see it, you know, here come these bizarre vehicles out there hovering above the water. Now, they're coming across the waves of the ocean, loaded with troops, and those troops can carry limited tactical nuclear weapons. We've come to the place now where an infantryman loaded with certain types of mortars and bazookas and with rifle rockets and that type of thing, and with anti-tank weapons, one man now, they've gotten these weapons down so super sophisticated and so powerful in such lightweight packages. They're just like our old World War II bazookas, but far more sophisticated now. They can arm an infantryman with a rocket that can literally blow up a huge tank. Go right through some of the thickest steel you ever saw. Destroy a tank. So when you see all these helmets, and they're made in the United States, you know, the uniforms are made in the United States, all the guns, the equipment, the web belt, the canteen, the whole appearance of the guy, everything made in the USA. Here comes the Shah of Iran with all of his forces. You see these helmets in this huge, funny-looking craft, and it's hovering over the ocean. Now, there may be a dozen of them. They're kind of in a formation out there. And here they come to the sandy beaches, but they don't land on the beach. They just keep right on flowing over the beach and just floating on air, as it were. Did you know that they have even begun flight of a prototype of what is going to be called a disco jet? To show you how spin-off from hovercraft used for the military can even accrue to civilian benefit. And there's a company now in Central California that is actually said to be flying a prototype of a little jet that is built like a flying saucer. And it has something like about a dozen snowmobile machines in it that turn huge fans. And that thing actually rises straight up off your garage roof, seats two people in a bubble canopy, and can go as high, they claim, as about 15 or more thousand feet, and they're claiming 200 miles an hour level cruise for that thing. Unbelievable, isn't it? Well, you know, I mean, the average person in our own daily way of life, reading our own local news, wondering what the Tigers, the Wildcats, or the Jackrabbits, the local team, are doing, and wondering about the food stamps and the pension check, and worried about the funeral coming up for Aunt Bessie, and wondering about vacation next year and why your teenage kids on pot are growing long hair or something else. The worries that we have every day. They are just not aware of this unbelievable burgeoning arms race, all the while world politicians talk of peace, talk of halting arms, talk of preventing the spread of arms. Why, the United States of America is one of the biggest traffickers in arms. It is the biggest. We're way in above the Soviet Union. It was some months ago I reported to you the exact statistics, and I don't have them here on the desk at the time. But we were way ahead of the Soviet Union in the amount of weapons that we were giving away, as well as selling to people or letting them borrow. You know, they're all worn out, but it's absolutely incredible. I know the rationale. We say, as some of our leading aircraft manufacturers would be quick to say, well, if we don't sell them, somebody else is going to. And we need the business. Well, I guess we do. You know, I told you many months ago, and I've told live stand-up audiences in parts of the country around the United States and Canada, that if time goes on the way it is now, much longer, by the time you look around a couple of times at the blue chip stock index and Dow Industrials and everything else in Washington and in, I should say, the stock market of New York City, you're going to find some of the big blue chip corporations of the United States basically controlled by the Arabs. And I've been reading a good bit about that lately. A tremendous flow of that money that we pay them and that Europe pays them for oil is being funneled back into, recycled, as they say, the United States, but it's purchasing shares of some of our old major corporations. Let me tell you, this country, I don't care what the administration says. I can go quote for you what Mr. Hoover said only a very few months before the biggest bursting of the biggest inflationary bubble you ever saw occurred. Wildly optimistic statements by the administration back then, prior to the Great Depression. And I grew up in the midst of that Great Depression. I remember exactly what it was like. And we're headed for another one. Now, that's scare talk, isn't it? No. No, it's not. If you really listen to the people who are conducting the seminars of businessmen's associations and groups, if you listen to some of the astute and the leading economists, they will tell you they believe all this artificial pumping up of the economy. If you are dealing right now with the problem of combating recession, then you are fueling future inflation. And it was a sad moment. No matter the happy kids getting out of school that are going to find a job now during the summer. It was a very sad moment when all that emergency employment business was signed in, because it merely means the printing of a lot more government money. It's merely dumping government funds back into circulation, trying to stimulate housing and building. But we're going to pay the piper probably sometime in about middle or late 1977. I don't know if it'll go to 79 before the bubble bursts, but the economists aren't gambling on it. They're saying by late 77 or 78, we're really going to begin to pay for what we're doing right now in trying to stave off recession. We want to heat up the economy. But we do so by deficit spending, by lots of red ink everywhere, by printing a lot of bills, and the only thing those bills are good for is to warm yourself in the fireplace when confidence is gone. As long as the confidence game is there, the bills are okay, as long as everybody believes in them, and as long as foreign creditors believe in them. But isn't it amazing that not only do the spinoffs from military research reach into every conceivable part of your private life, from the glasses you wear and the plastic pens you use and the kind of watches and chronographs you carry, to even building materials, clothing, pantyhose, all the way to everything we use, even to the pills that you take and the vitamin supplements and the foods you eat, packaging, processes of distribution, transportation, communications, all spin off from military research. But do you realize that much of the economy of the world depends upon building weapons for destruction? Do you know that if peace were to break out tomorrow, war would be the result? Because you simply can't halt the enormous machinery of tens of millions of laborers in hundreds of countries that are working constantly, and about 500,000 scientists and engineers working constantly on technical and scientific improvement of existing weaponry and development of new weapons, and the sales of arms, of ships, of tanks, of planes, of guns, and all that is attendant upon it. The parts, the supplies, the logistics, the maintenance of all that equipment. Why, to halt all of that arms building would send every one of the major weapons manufacturers into the biggest, unbelievable economic tailspin you ever saw, and would result in food wars, in riots, and a complete and total breakdown of all of society. Now, that's kind of like saying you're hanged if you do and hanged if you don't. It's like saying we're going to all be blasted off the face of the earth if this arms race continues, but if you stop it, we're all going to see the disintegration of society as we know it and degeneration into food wars and ravaging, snarling packs of human beings like so many animals that are fighting one with another, a neighbor with a neighbor, against dwindling means of survival. And you know, that's exactly what I am saying. And it's exactly what you ought to take a look at, because it's exactly what's going to happen. I have a reason for saying that, and that reason is Bible prophecy. Because civilization, as we know it, is doomed. If you want to call that doomsday talk, then, brother, that's what it is. But I'm not talking about humankind being doomed. I'm saying civilization, as we know it, and by the words we use to identify it, is doomed. Its death knell is built inside the organization of man's own structured societies. Yes, societies need changing. But unfortunately, man merely substitutes one other inept, inadequate, faulty system for the one he is striving to replace. Perhaps one of the worst things that can happen to a despot, a dictator, and even a communist who ends up being a dictator, because the left and the right meet full circle in the extreme, somewhere in the middle. That doesn't sound quite accurate, but it's true. Communism usually ends up being a stifling dictatorship. So nevertheless, the worst thing that can happen is for the poor person to succeed. He overthrows the status quo and becomes instantly the proprietor of the new status quo. It's only then a certain amount of time before there will yet come other dissident voices who will want to overthrow this new status quo. And if they succeed, they become the proprietors of the new status quo. Eventually, after the tiresome repetition of history, they in turn will be overthrown. Well, the United States is looking around the corner, actually already begun the ceremonies in that sense, a years-long ceremony and more, of the celebration of its bicentennial. By the 4th of July of 1976, we'll be 200 years old, formally and officially. And you know, we're still a very young society. There were societies of ancient history, including ancient Tyre, the Roman Empire, Medo-Persians, the Greco-Macedonians, so many others, Egypt, certainly a case in point, that lasted for thousands of years. But finally, they, too, fell. But what you're going to be shocked to see is how quickly it can all happen. Because no one seems to understand how absolutely vulnerable our society is. It's fragile. It is vulnerable. It is subject to great disruption and disarray. And practically anything can do it. Sudden spring snowstorm can do it. An earthquake can do it. A tidal wave could do it. Terrible unseasonable weather could do it. A few days stifling temperature inversion and subsequent poisoning of the air and horrible smog could do it. Power blackouts can do it. So many things could come along to disrupt society. And of course, when you see the terrible disruption even economically today that is happening, you need to realize that our civilization is tottering along on some last legs. Oh, I know, we'd rather hear somebody stand up and tell them, I'm optimistic about America, and then tell us about the great country. And when they talk about the great country, they're so right, because there is so much that is so great about it, especially the country. You know, you talk about the country. I think of Kansas wheat fields. And you might throw in a lot of other places like Illinois, Nebraska, North and South Dakota. But you know what I mean. The entirety of the breadbasket. And don't discount California, because something like 46% of all the vegetables consumed by Americans come from the Central Valley of California. That's where an incredible amount of the produce comes from. But sure, I think of the verdant plains and the purple hills. And I think of the shining deserts and from sea to shining sea. And I think of the inscription at the foot of the Statue of Liberty and Mount Rushmore. and a flag crackling in the breeze. Oh, yes, I think of all the good, patriotic, emotional thoughts of a beautiful, bounteous, wonderful, fabulous country that gives you every blessing anybody could ever want, and I also look at the fact of New York City. To me, already uninhabitable, the people who live there seem to like it, but a city virtually going bankrupt, cutting down on police and other vital services to the point of up to 20-30%, isn't it? The mayor has had to say recently in New York City that they're going to try to screen emergency calls and only give attention to the most important. How in the world are they going to tell that and just how they screen them? You know what that means? That means argument and delay. You're standing in a street corner in New York City. Somebody is trying to get in with a knife. He's already stabbed you twice. And you call up and say, help, help, you know, I'm being raped or I'm being attacked or there's an assailant outside. And they say, just a minute, lady, hold the line, would you? Hey, who wants to take this call? Some gal here claims she's being attacked. Oh, forget it. I've already got three attacks on the other line. Oh, okay. Sorry, lady. Call back. You know, we're busy. I mean, what do you mean, scream? Somebody is being raped. Somebody's being mugged. Somebody's being knocked to the ground. You know that statement that was made of the dramatic cutback in vital services in New York City as a result of the simple bankruptcy of that city? They're just absolutely unable to support the immense cost of running a city that big. And so it shows you the fragility and the vulnerability of a city that size. That must have been like one of the greatest announcements to have been heard in history for all the petty crooks, chivers, pimps, streetwalkers, muggers, rapists, robbers, con men, second-story men, in New York City. They're going to have an absolute field day. But it also means that the average citizen had better beware because you're not safe. Well, of course, New York City or any other big city, you're not safe anyway. The only place I know you're really safe is in Jerusalem. I was talking to Teddy Kollek recently. We were at a reception in the private home of Gideon Hausner, who was the chief prosecuting attorney in the Eichmann trial, and Teddy Kollek was there. And he was reiterating again how Jerusalem is one of the safest cities on the face of the earth for a person to walk around in. Now, I know I've heard of terrorist bombing, and I've been there, and I've, you know, been very well up to date on all of that type of thing. But nevertheless, his statement is true. You can walk the streets of the old city, Jew and Arab alike, in perfect safety. And so far as muggings, purse snatchings, and that type of crime, they're very low and almost non-existent. You just don't have that problem in some other cities, even in really troubled spots of the world. Yet, in America's big cities, we've got a higher crime rate than in many, many nations all put together in Europe. Well, you're at a kind of an impasse when you look at the overview of the world, because you see on the one hand that the world is talking peace and talking arms limitations, and on the other hand it is building, manufacturing, developing, improving, and creating weapons, weaponry, methods of destruction. But do you get the point? The economies of the world are geared to it. It's just like a person on a heroin trip. They are hooked and they can't get off. You have an either or, but no, there's a third element you haven't considered, and that is divine intervention. As to whether or not there is a God and whether that God is going to literally take a hand in world events. I said civilization as we know it is doomed. But a new civilization is going to come in its place. And that's the good news beyond. I just barely whetted your appetite, maybe, but really I'm on a whole series of programs along this same line. So you can listen next time, the time after that, and I'll explain even further. In the meantime, write for the current number of The Plain Truth and get these articles that give you a grasp of the overview of world conditions in the light of Bible prophecy. And request while you're at it the booklet, The Real Jesus.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.